But first up, we're going to be talking about brain scanning or brain imaging techniques. And I'm delighted to welcome Dara Cannon. She's, as I said before, of the Neuroimaging Lab at NUI Galway. Welcome, Dara.
Hi, Sean. Thanks.
How you doing? Dara, maybe just give us an idea of your lab and what you do there, the different types of things you do there.
Well, we scan the brain using an MRI scanner, and we're taking a look for biological basis for mood and anxiety disorders or psychosis. So we might scan individuals with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder and take a look at what we can see physically or anatomically that might relate to some of the symptoms that those folk are going through.
Okay, and these are voluntary studies that you're linked with the University Hospital in Galway?
That's right, yes.
So you would get people that would come through the hospital system and that would volunteer for the study?
And we have healthy people who are matched for, say, age and gender who participate as well.
Okay. Maybe just give us a little bit of background to this whole area of brain imaging. You know, how long has it been around and what kind of advances have we seen in recent years?
Well, it was one of the first scans would have been in the early 1900s, and that would have been when they attempted to x-ray the head. And, of course, the contrast wasn't very good, and so they did something that MRI and, I suppose, modern imaging wouldn't exist without it, although it sounds quite coarse, to remove the CSF and put air in the spaces.
What's the CSF, just so people know?
The spinal fluid.
Yeah.
And so to remove that and add air, and then the x-ray had better contrast, and you could make out brain tissue, but not a huge amount of detail. And that practice would have ended around 30 years ago, or maybe slightly less. So they, I imagine, would have been quite painful. They bored holes in the skull to do that, and they were pretty rudimentary images. But CT now is extremely fast and common, available in all hospitals, about 36 CT machines in Ireland, I'd say. MRI, slightly less, so slightly more expensive, and has a better level of detail, but in an emergency, say, or a trauma, CT would be more likely to see an immediate injury or an active bleed early after the injury. So you'll have both of those types of brain scan performed quite commonly in hospitals in Ireland at the moment.
Okay, so presumably you've access to a CT and an MRI scan as part of your work?
That's right, but for research purposes, you're looking for the highest resolution, and MRI will generally give you that.
Okay. Is there a level beyond MRI, or is that kind of where it's at?
There are higher and higher strength magnets used in MRI, so you could have 7 Tesla, which gives incredible anatomical detail, but not what you would get, say, post-mortem, looking at tissue directly. So it doesn't approach that just yet. There's an 11 Tesla in use, say, in animals in other countries, and there are difficulties with that technology because of the heat produced and other variables, but they're working on it.
Okay, and presumably brain scans originally were trying to look for tumours or maybe signs of brain damage or something after an accident. So when did it kind of start getting into the area of mental illness or mental disorders of all kinds?
Well, those studies, I guess, are rapidly accelerating in the last 10 to 20 years, but would have begun shortly before that, looking at, say, CT scans, looking at the size of the ventricles, which would be commonly larger in schizophrenia. So they would have been some of the earlier indications from CT scans. More recently, functional MRI would look at brain activity. And so what's quite common is to have someone in the scanner and present them with a task that, say, for instance, they might gamble and win or lose. And you could look at the inactivity in the entire brain in a few seconds or milliseconds while they're anticipating winning or losing, and then take a look at the comparison to what happens in different areas that react then when they either win or lose. And you can set that up to, you know, make them expect that they're going to win and have them lose, and then take a look at what that kind of a
right and kind of nearly in real time kind of thing is it, or
absolutely real time presentation of the activity of a person's brain to themselves gives them a tangible way to modify their own neural reaction to a stimulus. And there are early studies on that, so that would be biofeedback using real-time functional MRI.
Okay. Well, say the most common mental illness, then, I presume it's depression, really. Can that be seen? I know people are completely different and their brains are different too, but can you get an indication that there's depression from an image of a brain?
Yeah. I mean, in a healthy person who reenacts a sad event, so if you read them back a story that they've given you earlier about something that is particularly salient to them and makes them feel sad again, you can see changes in activity in emotional areas of the brain. so say the glucose metabolism or activity of that brain area
sugar,
may
basically.
Change.
Yeah.
While they're experiencing sadness. So you can certainly detect emotions. To look at an individual and diagnose with depression is quite different, and the variables overlap between, say, healthy controls and depression, depending on what you're looking at. So you can look at brain activity, or you can look at particular molecules like the serotonin transporter, the target of antidepressants like Prozac, and depending on what molecule you're looking at, the variance may be too great to actually distinguish between individuals. But some of the first types of scans that have been successful in distinguishing controls from schizophrenia have begun to be performed, and those are specifically looking at a measure called diffusion, which looks at the orientation of fibers in the brain.
Fibers being what, or where are they? Or
fibers are the axons, so they're the parts of neurons that travel between two different, what we call gray matter areas.
Yeah.
They're the links, yeah, and so their structural integrity would facilitate communication between different emotional brain areas. So if their integrity is reduced or their orientation is variant, it may indicate issues with communication between those different regions.
So with this might be something to do with disordered thinking or negative thinking or whatever, that the links between different parts of the brain aren't what they should be?
That's what's supposed right now.
Yeah.
They do increase naturally, say, if you learn piano,
they'll
increase
in
certain areas of the brain, or you can demonstrate changes with learning. Just like the earlier commonly cited study of the taxi drivers when they're about to take their exam in London, they have a larger hippocampus after. So there are things you can detect that are
hippocampus
naturally
for memory, I
exactly
presume.
Yeah. Brain, yeah. So you can detect changes based on learning and various natural.
Well, I know there's lots of technical issues with this whole area, but it's fascinating, isn't it, in terms of the potential that may be there at some point in the future?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, the idea of a biological basis for diagnosis would appeal to anyone who has seen the system in detail. So somebody might present and they'll be interviewed, and the interview is extremely detailed in terms of family history, personal history, medication history, maybe genetic liability, and other aspects. But there's no biological test unless it's ruling out another organic cause, such as, say, a hormone-producing tumor or hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
But for the psychiatric diagnoses themselves, there isn't generally a biological test, such as a genetic test or a scan.
The consultants usually, I think, they operate based on their experience and their knowledge of how people respond, and, you know, they're not actually getting tests, as you say, done on people.
That's right, and I suppose the downside of that, not being a psychiatrist myself, is that individuals may try a medication and spend some time working towards getting a medication at the right dose for the right duration to see an effect on their quality of life. So most of the psychiatrists that I work with will cite one of the prominent, closer, tangible things that we may be able to do sooner is predict who may respond to a given medication.
Okay.
So it may reduce the time that people spend in a very low quality of life attempting to see some improvement in
which antidepressant might work and which isn't working. You might be able to see that in
right.
Before and after scans.
Yeah, possibly, or based on a genetic predisposition combined with imaging. Yeah.
Would it ever be possible, do you think, at some point in the future, say with schizophrenia, where there is damage caused in the brain, the longer schizophrenia is there, to maybe try and identify it before it becomes a problem, maybe when people are in their teens?
Possibly. The longitudinal approach and the approach of scanning individuals prior to disease onset is hampered by a couple of things, in that you may have to scan 1,000 people to have a small number who go on to progress to have it. Some of the scales that look at, say, in 14-year-olds, the types of thoughts that they have that predict reasonably well which individuals are at a higher risk of developing it. But being at a risk of developing it doesn't always mean that you will go on to develop it. So you may have a situation where you then have a type of genetic counselling situation where you've got to give people adequate information that isn't going to hamper their own.
Yeah, like they would do, like they would do with Huntington's disease or something like that. These genetic diseases, where there's a risk that if there's a familial risk, presumably for schizophrenia, maybe you could target the scans towards those people. And again, in the future, I mean, presumably you could identify the drugs that would work best in people. You could monitor how they're getting on to see if they continue to be well, presumably, and I mean, could you even say with depression, it might be difficult, but could you ever target or could you ever identify when people are really in trouble, when they might be suicidal, say?
That's a very difficult one. About one third of suicides would be related to a mental illness like depression. Others can be impulsivity and not related to mental illness. So that's probably got a much more highly variable biological basis. So it's a very difficult one. I think talking and questions and screening would be the broadest way to monitor in those situations. The severity of in a depressed individual, the severity of their sadness can be assessed to some extent, but it's difficult to differentiate between different levels and different individuals because it's hugely subjective.
Yeah, because, you know, not every depressed person goes to that level. And with your own studies then, the bipolar and the other one is psychosis, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what stage are they at, or have you started to find anything out at this point?
Well, we're a relatively young lab, and we started in about 4 or 5 years ago, and Professor McDonald opened the lab and initiated those studies. They are finished recruitment, and they're in the analysis stage. So some of the preliminary findings do indicate a biological basis within certain categories. So
okay, so yeah, it's early days, I know, but...
Mm.
Yeah, and are you still at the point when you're looking for volunteers for these studies, or are you okay now at this point?
No, but hopefully we'll be starting some new studies in the near future.
You can't mention what it is at the moment, is it? It's still in the works.
So you apply for grant funding and you hope for the best.
Okay.
But if I have grant funding, I'll definitely be on to ask for volunteers.
Sure, and maybe we'll have you back on if that. Hopefully you'll get the funding and that'll go ahead.
Exactly.
But we've just run out of time for today, Dara, but thank you very much for coming on. That's Dara Cannon. She was telling us about the brain imaging or brain scanning work that's going on in the neuroimaging laboratory based in NUI Galway. Fascinating area where, you know, they've started to look at various mental illnesses in terms of the biology of the mental illness. Can you actually see what's going on with a brain scan?